Time to get busy.
Like we always do about this time.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm sorry.
On ESPN 1000.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
He was going the right way. Cohen, all the way. Touchdown, Chicago.
There won't be some Rams renaissance with this Bears team. That's just not happening. Even with Mitch Trubisky, you may have the jersey, but you don't know what that guy really is.
To market it, to answer. Come on.
Oh, bang, bang, bang. Sriracha.
Joseph Sikora.
I think I saw you in a commercial with Michael Jordan. Were you with Jordan?
With Michael Jordan, yeah.
What was your line in that commercial?
It is Michael Jordan.
That's all you had.
It's time to just look under the hood. No stone should be unturned. I don't even know what that means.
A Louisiana couple is accused of attempting to rob an Uber driver
under the hood
that the woman distracted by being topless.
With Jonathan Hood.
I got an engine underneath my hood.
Oh, it's a topless woman. Oh, I'm totally distracted now.
Weeknights on ESPN 1000.
And welcome in. This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Open phone lines for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776. The telephone number, hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweet J Hood, on Instagram, IG J Hood. We're going to hear from Jesse Rogers coming up in about 7 minutes, his thoughts about what's going on with the winter meetings with the Cubs and the White Sox as we broadcast live from our first Midwest Bank Studio. Also, if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. Have our share of pro wrestling conversation with Mike Johnson from PWInsider.com. That comes your way at the bottom of the hour right here on ESPN 1000. Don't forget to download the podcast wherever you download your podcast. Look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. That's where all our shows are stored. All of our segments, some on ESPN 1000, some are just segments that we just do off the air. You never know. Always bonus content on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Download it, rate, subscribe, and listen and enjoy. As always, we appreciate you being with us here on this Tuesday night. As I mentioned, we're going to hear from Jesse in a little bit. So on both sides of town, with the White Sox, from the White Sox standpoint, the White Sox still need to be able to find themselves a pitcher, a starting pitcher. Grandal is a terrific start along with the young players. They were able to solidify Abreu as a future first baseman, DH, however you want to say. The point is that until the Sox are able to get that starting pitcher, maybe that's Madison Baumgartner. I don't know. But I just know that the Sox need to be able to get themselves a starting pitcher to really say, okay, here we go. Because adding offense is one thing, along with this young team. I always say this about young players in sports. They're all suspects, not prospects, until we see them get the job done on a regular basis. And so what Rick Hahn and what Kenny Williams and the White Sox have built is nice on paper, but paper doesn't win you championships. And it's very important for the White Sox to try to find themselves in a position to contend in the American League Central, not just for a year, but to be able to be that team, that hard out in the playoffs, that team that's going to climb to build themselves into a World Series. We have seen the Marlins do this. Hey, there's a World Series championship, and now we strip it down. Hey, there's a World Series championship, and now we strip it down. They make it look very easy, right? The Astros going for over 100 losses to being a title contender, winning a World Series championship. So what holds the Sox back? See, that's the thing. The Sox have to be able to be all in at this point in time. And Jerry Reinsdorf is someone who really believes in this White Sox team, a man who's said on the record he would trade some of those Bulls championships for more World Series championships. That's how much he loves baseball and much he loves the White Sox. If you love the team, then you'll be able to pony up the money to be able to get starting pitching for this team along with the young players on this roster. All right, so not only with the White Sox, but also from the Cubs standpoint. The Cubs, when we, and Jesse's going to say this in our report coming up a little bit because he mentioned it last night. All of a sudden now, the money that was doled out to be able to build a World Series championship, all of a sudden, not there. It was interesting to watch last year how Ricketts and the Chicago Cubs went about their business. It's as if Ricketts said, okay, you're going to put up this big money for Tyler Chatwood and for Yu Darvish, go for it. That's exactly what happened. He said, okay, you got these two pitchers, then you should be vying for a World Series, right? Oh, you're not? Well, I can't continue to spend more money like where the Yankees or the Red Sox. You're going to have to figure some things out physically. And this is not like cheap Wrigley company, cheap Tribune company. Don't get it twisted. The Cubs are still spending money. But they're going to be a little bit more smart about it because they got to put more money into the farmers market and all the stuff around Wrigley Field. I get it. The team is good enough to contend, but they have to be able to get rid of some of your favorites if you're a Cubs fan. And that might mean Chris Bryant. It very well could be the case. Some thoughts now from the Baseball Tonight podcast, Buster Olney and Clinton Yates talking about Bryant. Could Bryant go to the World Champion Nationals?
It would make absolute sense to me if they were to be the team to call the Cubs and say, look, we'll give you a couple of prospects and we'll take Chris Bryant off your hands for at least the next year, maybe two, depending on this decision that comes down and his grievance against the Cubs over service time. What do you think?
I think that's an excellent idea. I love that. I don't think Chris Bryant is as good as Tony Rendon or this team. That's a personal opinion. It doesn't mean I think Chris Bryant is bad. But that is a stopgap that I think would make sense because, number one, look, I mean, if Brent wants to get out of Chicago, as you stated, then yes, you love to pick up a guy who's ready to go. The weird part, though, is that Tony is kind of that guy, too. He doesn't apparently want to be in D.C., which is an awkward little, I don't want to say secret, but a thing that people talk about. And I love Brian. I think that, I like his game. I'm still thinking about how a player like Anthony Rendon leaving affects the long-term free agent situation with Washington and the fans, because look, you drafted, developed, and watched Tony Rendon blossom. If you win the World Series with a guy like that and he doesn't even want to stay, what does that say about your franchise? It's kind of a bummer when you think about it that way.
Clinton Yates on with Buster Olney on the Baseball Tonight podcast. Some thoughts from Rick Renneria now talking about his thoughts of trying to add left-handed bats to the lineup.
How much is balance important to you guys going forward as a legitimate contender in your lineup? Obviously, defense and all that is important. But, I mean, you know, you have Grandal now to go along with it, and you know, maybe you'll get another left-handed bat. How important is that?
Well, it's hugely important. I think that in order for us to be able to compete against all the clubs, in specific in the American League, you need to have a lineup that's ready to go 1 through 9. You know, you make it more difficult for the starting pitchers. You make it difficult for anybody who's coming in relief. I think that the organization in general is working toward trying to solidify that lineup through and through and to catch at the major league level on a consistent basis. I think it requires a tremendous amount of commitment, which I think he has. And I think he's taken a hold of coming here and realizing, man, there's a little bit more to the major league game than I thought. And he took it to heart. And I think he's going to continue to push himself to develop and be the better player that he can be.
So you have two really good veteran catchers in Rendon and McCann. So where do you find, and it's so early now, even December, but where do you envision finding time for Zach?
Well, I think we go into camp and we let it play itself out. I think we have to allow him still an opportunity to continue to improve and show us what he's about. And I think that those things have a way of taking care of themselves in terms of what the player does and how they talk to us through their actions.
Ricky, when the front office is involved in getting players and trying to convince them to come to the south side, what is your message to guys of why this is a destination and why they should want to be a part of your group?
I think it's really simple. I think we turn to the players that we already have. I think we turn to the things that we've improved upon. There's no one, I don't think, that we've talked to even toward the end of last year and even people that we've spoken to in terms of possibly coming here that don't see where we're at right now. I think there's an optimism and an excitement about the South Side right now that's legit. I don't think it's made up. It's not, you know, it's real. We have some players now that are starting to step it up, that their skill set is starting to show, and I think that it does require a commitment by them to continue to push themselves to be excellent. You still want to have fun. You still want to enjoy the game, but we're not going to stop emphasizing that we have to be fundamentally sound at every, you know, at every level of the game, and push ourselves to be the best that we can be. And you're not going to win just with one guy. It's not going to happen. You got to play as a team. If the game has told us anything, when clubs come together, all the different pieces that are put there, and they work alongside of each other in conjunction with one goal in mind, which is having success, it works. And so it's no different. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to let it roll the way it's supposed to roll.
Okay, we'll see. Rick Renneria, the manager for the White Sox. Again, the Sox need to get their John Lester in place. Got to get their John Lester in place, meaning to have a starting pitcher that could be able to start to kind of jumpstart this rebuild in a big way for the Southsiders. Glad that you're with me here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Let's go to Phoenix and say hello to Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs for ESPN and ESPN.com, and he joins us here with our report. Hello, Jess.
Hey, Jay Hutt. Good evening.
Good evening to you, pal, because, you know, you're having a good time. Give me a little something in San Diego, though. How are you enjoying your time?
It's been busy. It's been really busy trying to move around to all these different teams. So I'm trying to keep track of this third base trade market and free agency market, you know, because it does affect the Cubs. So I've been to my Rizzo's suite, the defending champs. I've been up to Alex Anthopoulos' suite, the Braves. Mm-hmm. GM, you know, all this movement. We're waiting on Rendon. We're waiting on Josh Donaldson. They're both asking for the moon in their own way. Rendon, you know, obviously one of the richest contracts probably in history for him. And Donaldson is trying to get three digits. He's trying to get $100 million. I don't know if he's going to get that. But, you know, it's interesting how one thing affects another. And I was talking to Chet Hoyer about that. And, you know, they can't move on trades until seemingly these couple free agents move, you know, sign. And so it's a little bit of a logjam for the Cubs. I thought they'd get something done this week. Now it's less likely.
We didn't talk about this last night because this is developing now, because this was part of the Baseball Tonight podcast, and it's been kind of talked about. What if, when it comes to Bryant to the Nationals, how's that look for Bryant to the Nationals, and what the Cubs could get in return?
Yeah, I don't believe that's a priority or in the forefront for Mike Rizzo. In fact, I mean, I think he told me this on the record, but I'm going to relay it anyway. He said they're concentrating on the free agent front. I mean, they need all sorts of pitching in their bullpen and stuff. So I don't think they can afford to give up anything that's major league ready. And I think the Cubs want something major league ready as well as prospects. But it doesn't matter. He's not focused on it. So I don't think that's happening. I guess if the musical chairs, you know, if you're playing musical chairs and the music stops and they have nobody at third base, that's when they might turn to it. But they're absolutely focused on Rendon. Probably not going to get him. I think they have a shot at Donaldson. I mean, think about it. If you're in on Rendon for $300, then all of a sudden you only have to give $90 to Donaldson. That sounds like a deal, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about perspective. So I don't think Bryant to the Nats is real. I think Phillies is out there. I think Braves, you know me, I've been on that for 3 days now. The Dodgers are laying in the wheat. That is not impossible. There could be a mystery team like the Padres. They're always weird and stuff. You can't really figure them out. But I think if there's a mystery team that trade-wise, I think it'd be the Dodgers, as crazy as that sounds.
Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs for ESPN 1000 and ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. A lot of our conversation, especially toward the latter part of the season, Jesse, was talking about the relief corps. I remember a lot of our late-night conversations talking to you, telling me, like, there's no way the Cubs can go north with a lot of these guys in the bullpen. I'm wondering how that will be addressed here in the offseason.
Not anytime soon. I mean, if it is, it's million-dollar guys or less. So it's just guys that have options. Remember, there's a 26th man on the roster now. So you want a couple more guys with options, it could just shuttle back and forth between Iowa and Chicago. So right now, it's like million-dollar or less. It's the one part I don't understand. And the front office with Theo and Jed, they're very reluctant to talk about budgets and stuff like that, payroll. You kind of got to, you know, squeeze it out of them or read between the lines. So the one thing I don't understand is, I mean, I sort of understand, but I don't. My point being, they really can't add $3 million, $4 million, $5 million until they shed themselves. Like, they have to shed first. I just feel like you lose out on some guys that might sign elsewhere. my point being, I get they can't add five without shedding, but the season doesn't start tomorrow. You can add five tonight and still have time to shed, you know, and it's only five or six or seven. So that's my point. Those relievers right now are not going to the Cubs. And it's not like they're signing, you know, a ton of relievers all over the place, these teams. But I don't know when it's going to be addressed. I guess the answer is when they make the trades that open up some salary. But I just don't see why you feel like you're going to get stuck with a $6 million player because you shed no salary between now and April. It's not realistic in my mind. But maybe ownership has said, do not add a dime until you subtract some.
Does this feel to you in your gut that this is – year one of Ross is a step back to take two steps forward? Because if I already have a nice payroll and I know I just need to add a few quality players, I got to catch up with Milwaukee and St. Louis. I can't afford to just think, well, just, you know, I'm going to take two steps backwards or take a step backwards and assume that I'll be right back at the top of the Central again. You made the case even late last year that, hey, watch out for Cincinnati. That might be an improving team too. So I guess if I'm the Cubs, I don't have time to wait, man. I got to be able to stay competitive here, at least for a wild card if I can get there next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting debate. I think what they're going to do is on paper take a step back, but potentially still have enough talent to win and hope that Ross makes that difference. They play above, you know, a few guys overachieve because David Ross in his first year, you know, sort of inspires them. Remember, Lou Piniella in his first year success, Dusty Baker in his first year success, Joe Mann in his first year success. You have the attention of your players. So I guess that's the point. He has their attention, but he may not have as much talent on the team. So does attention get you a playoff spot? I don't know. But I think that they feel with 2 years to go to free agency for five guys, in 3 years for Contreras, they have no choice but to make some moves now. And on top of it, they don't like the lineup. They just don't like it. It was good individually, not as a whole. So they're going to check off a bunch of boxes, kill a bunch of birds with one stone here as they trade Bryan or Contreras and, you know, give Ross a good team, but not necessarily a World Series contender on paper. Jay Hood, I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes 100% sense. Let's dig a little deeper on Contreras because we didn't talk about this last night, so I think you and I need to talk about this. So what makes Contreras expendable, and what could replace the production from Contreras offensively on this roster?
Yeah, I mean, the first question is a good one because on paper people would say, why are you trading Bryant? Why are you trading Contreras? And the reason he's expendable is, first of all, they have a few doubts about him. He hasn't really calmed his game down. I don't just mean his energy. They like his energy, but you got to calm your game down behind the plate. So there's a few words that they see that other teams might not see. But the main reason is the value you can get for him. Right now they're asking for the moon for him, by the way. Jeff Passan reported that, and I heard that separately, simply because he's got 3 years left. That's a pretty good amount of time. And he is not making anything right now. Nothing. And he's a catcher. That's a hot commodity. So they're asking for the moon. They can get a lot for him. They can get a decent amount for Bryant. The other guys, other than Baez, that's a different category, I think, not going to get a ton for Rizzo because of the position he plays, not a lot of openings at first base for contending teams. You're not getting a lot for Schwarber, not the value you want. So Baez would be the only other one. But that's one of those, as soon as you trade him, you need to replace him, a stud shortstop and stuff. Not that you don't need to replace Bryant or Contreras, but I think shortstop's a little different. They don't grow those on trees. So that's why Contreras can be expendable. It's not because he's bad. It's because other teams love him so much, and they see the Cubs see the value they can get back.
I know you're not covering the team, but I know you got your ear to the ground when it comes to the White Sox. And I said, as you were coming in, the Sox need to be able to find that starting pitcher, Jess. It's something that it's a must. And I don't know what the Sox are looking at, but do you foresee the Sox being in the mix for one of the free agents that are available for starting pitching? Because this thing can't get jump-started just on Grandal alone. You got to make another splash pick, I think, especially from pitching.
Yeah, they're trying. I mean, I said at the beginning of the week, I think there's a good chance they'd sign a mid-tier free agent pitcher. And, of course, instead, there's a good chance they're going to make a trade for an outfielder because I am always on the money on this stuff. You know, there's rumors out there about the outfielder out of Texas that they might trade for, as I'm sure you know. And Rick Hahn addressed that directly. He said, look, there's a chance we could sign a free agent. By the time it's all said and done, we're gone. You know, meaning he does his physical and all that stuff. So the more likely track is a trade, at least in the next few days, because that is probably 50-60% of the way there. And a free agent is 50-60% of the way there. They can't announce it necessarily, but it might leak anyway. So I think there's dual tracks going on, trade for an outfielder and signing of a pitcher. But it does sound like a trade could get done quicker for the White Sox, which surprised me. I didn't think they would trade from their prospect base, but the way they do it, they're doing it is trading maybe a guy in the minors or a guy that has 5 years left in the majors before free agency. So it's really prospect for prospect in a sense. What they won't do is prospect for a veteran, you know, what guy with a year left. So that's where the Cubs and Sox don't match up this offseason, by the way.
The kid Mazzara from the Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
Nomar Mazzara, who's 24 years old, right fielder. Yeah, you got to shore that up too, but if the Sox feel that they're close or a year away, I still believe in the Lester principle. Even if you're not going to contend, Jess, you got to still, you know, you still got to jumpstart this thing. You got to have a guy that's a leader in that starting rotation. But we'll see.
Know that. I mean, they absolutely know that. So far, they've been sort of turned away. You know, turned down. You know, Wheeler being the latest guy, but at least they did get Grandel. So I think the beauty of it for the Sox is not to put too much pressure on Giolito, but I mean, he's an emerging ace, right? What he did last year was amazing. So they have some young stud pitchers that could be ones and twos. If Madison Baumgartner came to the Sox, he wouldn't have to be a one for the next 5 years. You know, there are guys where the Cubs needed a one at the time when Lester was signed. I think, you know, their top end is going to be good. So of course they could sign a top end guy, but they could sign a middle of the rotation guy just as well. If he's a veteran, that could be their John Lester.
All right, Jesse, give me some whispers in the lobby. What are you hearing? Give me a whisper in the lobby. Doesn't matter what team.
Okay.
Give me a little something.
I'll give you the Cubs. So I mentioned this earlier about shedding salary and not adding. I predict, and I don't have a name yet, but I predict pretty soon after they make their first trade, they will sign a left-handed second baseman who can play a little outfield, who will be an on-base guy, and maybe definitely lead off if they need him. Probably not a 162-game player, but it easing Nico Hoerner in from the right side. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's shuttled up and back from Iowa, and this guy is your veteran on-base threat, $4 million player, $8 million player over 2 years at most, something like that. I predict that's one of the first moves after they make a trade.
Ah, nice little – you've been hearing some things. Whispers in the lobby. Ah.
Yeah, but it all has to wait until it's weird how everything has to happen like dominoes. The free agent third baseman have to sign. The Cubs then have to trade Chris Bryant. And then they can replace him with an $8 million infielder.
So ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a pair back payroll to add more payroll at some point. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and I'm working on a story. You guys got to check it out for ESPN.com about extensions. And, you know, who should get him if they are trading Bryant? I mean, Baez is an obvious one. Man, I think Rizzo should get one. I really do. But we'll see. I don't believe he's going to, but we'll see. So I think there's a lot of moving parts with this team right now. The sooner they start getting something done, the sooner they can sort of add and rearrange the deck chairs here and come up with a roster for 2020.
Jesse, as always, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
You got it, Trejo. Take care.
It's Jesse Rogers from San Diego at the winter meetings with us here on ESPN 1000. This portion of Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood is brought to you by Illinois Media School. Go to the website, beonair.com. That's beonair.com, or call this number, 630-916-1700, 630-916-1700 for Illinois Media School, flexible class schedules, and financial aid for those who qualify. Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday is next.
Jonathan Hood.
That's super hot. Hey, give me my respect. Give me my respect. I just took it left like on ambidex. I moved through London with the Euro step.
On ESPN 1000.
Wrestling fans, are you ready?
This is Tuesday.
You people bought a ticket to see me, so shut up.
Wrestling.
Wrestling Tuesday with Jonathan Hood.
First of all, Dusty Rhodes, I think what you are is a big, ugly, low-class redneck goof. That's what I think you are.
Yeah, I put it. I know I put it. But most of all, the baddest man around in the world today.
Follow the show at WrestlingTWT on Twitter and Instagram.
But remember, my fireflies, as always, I'll light the way. And all you have to do is let me in.
Tuesday, Wrestling Tuesday.
The bottom line is, in all my magnificence, you're going to be mine all night long.
Here's Jonathan Hood.
Welcome to Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday with me, Jonathan Hood, right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Every Tuesday at 9:30, we give you your fill of sports entertainment slash pro wrestling. So glad that you're with me right here. Don't forget to follow the show on Twitter at WrestlingTWT. Don't forget the YouTube page as well, YouTube.com. Look for Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. Also on Instagram, it is WrestlingTWT as well. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to hear from Mike Johnson from PWInsider.com. We're going to get his thoughts about some of the storylines around professional wrestling. A couple of things off the top of my head before we hear from Mike here, and we're going to call him in just a second. I was on Busted Open on SiriusXM Fight Nation this past Friday. A great time with Dave LaGreca. If you have not heard our show, that's in the archives of the Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday podcast. Wherever you download your podcast, look for Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. You subscribe. That way you never miss any of our wrestling content. Some of it's on ESPN 1000. Some of it is not. Some of it is just exclusive for the podcast. But great time on Friday. We had Brian Alvarez from Wrestling Observer. He was on the show. He was very affable, very interesting thoughts from him. So check that out on the TWT podcast. There's been some releases taking place in the WWE, and I can't say that I'm surprised, because if you just go through some of these WWE wrestlers' Twitter pages, and you see it's almost a cry for help for some of these wrestlers that just want out, that they don't want to be with the company anymore. It says something for wrestling that no matter how much money that you're making, if you are unhappy or if you feel like you should be pushed or feel like you should be doing more in the company and you just continue to hang in catering and never get a chance to really do anything in wrestling, you can ask out. And that's exactly what happened with Sin Cara, with Luke Harper, and the tag team The Ascension. They're all gone from the WWE. ACH also gone from the WWE as well. Sin Cara said on Twitter that he wants out. Luke Harper also said the same things, like, you know what, I've asked for my release. And the WWE granted the releases of Sin Cara, by the way. Sin Cara, we start with him. Here is a Latino superstar before he came to the WWE. He comes there and he just can't get any traction. Someone that could be someone that you can enjoy and watch. And Sin Cara never got off the ground like he should have in the company. Luke Harper, who looks like Bruiser Brody from years past. Luke Harper, who was part of the Wyatt family, who can work. Somehow, some way, was always lost in the shuffle, taken off of television, came back to television. He asked for his release, and now he's going to go other places. If I'm Ring of Honor, if I'm MLW, if I'm AEW, or some of the other organizations out there, I'd ask for some of those wrestlers to come. The Ascension was never going to work outside of NXT. When they're in NXT, they're pretty good. But as soon as they even mention in one of their promos something about the Road Warriors or how they're better than the Road Warriors, that was the end. You never compare yourself to legends. That's exactly what the Ascension did, so they're out. So, there's going to be more, too. We've had a number of other wrestlers that wanted out of the WWE as well. As I mentioned, no matter how much money that you are making in a company, if you feel like you're not being utilized properly, you can always bounce. You can always do it for your own sanity, for your family, whatever the reason. But there's more wrestlers than what I just named that have asked for their release. We'll see if the WWE will grant more. I see that Seth Rollins has turned heel officially on Raw that took place last night. No surprise, because Seth Rollins was this white meat baby face that was trying to say all the right things, and the fans were just spitting him out. In that feud he had with The Fiend, everyone was on The Fiend's side. People were booing Seth Rollins, even though he was the baby face. Apparently, in some of these house shows around the country, he's still working as a baby face as far as his actions are concerned. That hasn't changed. His wrestling is still the same, but Seth's
demeanor has changed now. He's been with AOP. He's almost got like two bodyguards with him now. It's not a surprise. Seth Rollins works better as a heel anyway. Also, I saw the clip. I did not watch, but I saw the clip on YouTube about Rusev and Lana and their divorce angle. There's always been weddings and contract signings in the ring, but there's never been a divorce in the ring. Not a shoot divorce, but just kind of like a storyline divorce of Rusev and Lana. I don't know who this is entertaining besides maybe Paul Heyman and Vince McMahon. I don't know if this is entertaining anybody else on a regular basis. This has been a stupid storyline. And again, if you're one of those wrestlers in the back, like a Luke Harper, like Sin Cara and many others, and EC3 and so many others that are sitting in the back wanting an opportunity to get time on television, they have to sit there on the monitor and watch a Rusev, Lana, Bobby Lashley love triangle that is just dumb. This dumb television, mindless TV. Just don't understand. I see that TLC, the card is going to take place in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The TLC event that's going to be on the WWE Network. There has been very few matches that have been unveiled for this card. It just took this week for them to talk about the matches on the TLC card. And I'm like, wait, think about it. If you are a boxing fan or a fan of MMA, like if you are in a concert, right? How about this? If there's a concert and you say, and it says, hey, concert happening tonight, and it's a concert happening in your area, would you go if it just says music concert tonight? Do you know what kind of music it is? Do you know if it's your favorite band? You don't know if it's your favorite singing group, but it just says music tonight. Would you go? I think many of us would not go. We want to know what's on the card, what is on the bill for us to be able to spend our money for it. Comedy club tonight, comedians doing jokes tonight. Would you like to know who the comedians are? Is there someone in the top of that card? Would you just go because it's jokes tonight? That's what the WWE is doing. They have a show called TLC, and it only took to this week. Now, again, TLC is right around the corner, and now they're just unveiling the matches. That's just, it's Vince McMahon, the WWE, just taking fans for granted. I would not go across the street to see TLC, honestly. I wouldn't go across the street to see it because, like, why should I? I mean, if you don't think that I need 6 or 7 weeks of a build of what your card is going to be and what your matches are going to be, then I don't need to see it. It's not important to me. I saw the dog food angle. Did you see this on SmackDown? You wonder why some of the numbers are struggling on Fox Network for SmackDown. And by the way, every time you look around, when you watch the NFL, you watch, watch boxing or watch any other event on Fox TV, there's always a snipe right there to be able to promote SmackDown on Fox. There's always commercial SmackDown on Fox on Friday nights. It doesn't help the ratings when you have Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler handcuffing Roman Reigns and they're pouring dog food on his head. Of all the violence that I've seen in wrestling when there's been a wrestler handcuffed to the ropes or to the ring post or whatever, and they go with, let's pour dog food on the top of Roman Reigns' head. Two cans of dog food was underneath the ring. I mean, you talk about trying to get more people under the tent to watch a show on Fox, and then that happens. It's unbelievable. Again, I don't know who they're trying to entertain. I don't know who the WWE is trying to reach with that, but it's not reaching me. I'm an adult with a mortgage. Why would I be entertained by someone putting dog food on their head? It's just really strange. I tell you what, it really is. If you've missed some of my previous interviews or conversations about wrestling, I ask you to download the podcast Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. Look for that. Hit that subscribe button. iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and of course YouTube as well. Look for Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday and catch up on some of my previous interviews and conversations about the world of professional wrestling. Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We are so glad that you are with us as we are joined by Mike Johnson for PWInsider.com. As we have our conversation, go to PWInsider.com and check out the latest news, the PW Insider Elite, the Q&As, and everything else that come along with PWInsider.com. Mike Johnson joins us here on ESPN 1000. Mike Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Hello, Jonathan. How are you, my friend? Good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Same to you. So how similar or how different is wrestling in 2019 to the territory days of wrestling that we grew up with?
Oh, man. I think it's similar, but it's different at the same time. It's similar in that there are more places for wrestlers to work full time than there's been in maybe since 2001. However, it's different. Where before you had the territories, so let's say, you know, there's, for argument's sake, let's say there's 10 territories in the United States, right? So a wrestler and their family, they go to that territory, he works or she works there for a certain period of time. As it, as with all things, it starts to lose its flavor. I can head somewhere else. I can go from Texas to Georgia. I can go from Georgia to Portland. I can go from Portland to New York. And I can basically redo the same character I've already portrayed, or I can go and do something different. I can be a hero. I can be a villain. I could have a totally different character. I could go under a mask. Basically, my role could be the bottom of the card or the top of the card, depending on what the promoter wants. And I'm going to get paid accordingly. Now, especially with the advent of the internet, there are so many independent promotions that also get a lot of attention because they can stream stuff on Fight.tv or YouTube or Twitch or any of these other places. So they're not running a traditional territory. They might be running one show a month, but they've got a big show every month. So you basically have a generation of independent wrestlers now who are almost like the old school vaudeville performers, where I do my act, the next night I get on a train or I get on a plane, I go from New York to Philadelphia, I do it again, I go from Philly to Pittsburgh, I go from Pittsburgh to Orlando, I go from Orlando to Nebraska, I go from Nebraska to Seattle, and they're basically performing their same moveset, their same match with different opponents every night. So they're not working in one area, they're working in a lot of areas, and it's like a series of one-night stands. So it's kind of like, you know, Abbott and Costello, they're playing in New York, and now they're off to Pittsburgh, and now they're off to play the Catskills. And so it's kind of similar to that, and it's fascinating because it creates a lot of monotony, I think, where if you're following a star, we'll use the Briscoe brothers from Ring of Honor, for example. Mm-hmm. So you're following the Briscoe brothers. If you're watching all these matches, they might seem very similar to you, but when they're hitting all of these different areas to that audience in each individual area, it's very fresh and it's very new to them. So an independent wrestler now, especially, they have to play to so many different audiences because you're not just playing to the audience in the house live in the show, but you're playing to your audience that's following you on social media. You're playing to the audience that's following you via all the online subscription services now. So it's different, but it's similar. I probably think that the territory era was better in terms of awareness for talents because wherever they were, chances are they were on some major local station and they were drawing far bigger houses. And with the advent of cable, all those little local stations are now gone. So you're not going to draw based on your television. So that is worse for the talents, but they can find other ways to make money in ways that the territory wrestlers didn't. They can sell T-shirts online. They can sell autographs. They can sell. They do the cameos where you can do like the personalized greetings on video. So there's more different potential ways to make revenue, even for talents who aren't signed to an AEW or a Ring of Honor or a WWE or an Impact. Some of it's the same. Some of it's different. It's the entire alphabet soup of what pro wrestling was kind of became discombobulated and has been reassembled in a different pattern. That's all.
Yeah, Mike, I guess the sidebar to that I was going to ask you is the money, the money in hand for what you did in ring commensurate to, say, the 70s and 80s when it comes to territories? Because, yes, you can be able to have a Hot Topics and have your own T-shirt and have your own merch. I'm wondering what that money looks like if a wrestler that's a free agent goes to territory making good money. I wonder how similar that is to, say, the 80s.
Well, you know what the difference between then and now is? Then you were paid based on how the show drew, right? Mm-hmm. So if you were on a show with Hulk Hogan and that was the tour, you were going to make more money because the show with Hulk Hogan on top in the WWF was going to draw far more money and have a bigger crowd than, say, WWE secondary show, right? So right. The way the territory worked is if you work in the undercard, you got paid X. And the farther up the card you went, the more important you were to the card, you got paid more money. Now, most independent wrestlers, they negotiate, here's my fee, we'll say $500, for example, $500. So if they're working four matches over the course of the weekend, and their fee is $500, they're walking out with $2,000, possibly even in cash, depending on the promotion. So on paper, they're probably making more, but it's more of a hit and miss and how can I get myself booked, where in a territory you had a guarantee of you were going to make this bottom amount per week, and the more involved you were in the storylines and the more involved you were in drawing people into the buildings, you had the opportunity to make more. So the system has changed completely, even from the way that WWF handled things, because WWE, now you have a downside guarantee that you're going to get paid X no matter what every month, and then if you work some house shows, there's a bonus. If there's merchandise sales, there's a bonus. There's not, you know, there used to be bonuses for pay-per-views. Now those are kind of different because of the WWE Network. They're calculated differently, and there's not even, like, really a publicly known calculation for how that works now compared to the old days of the pay-per-view buy rates. So the system has changed. I think there's probably more talents making consistently decent to great money now than there's been in about 15 or 20 years. But if we go back and we compare it to payoffs from the territory era, there were probably guys and women making more money being in certain areas, but not everyone was making more money. Like now an undercard guy can say, well, I'm not going to work for less than $400. And if the promoter wants to pay him $400, he's going to get his $400, whether the show drew 10,000 or the show drew 1,000 or the show drew 50 people. It all depends on the negotiation. It really is, you know, a series of one-night stands, and they're out there kind of as, you know, weekend. Some of them are weekend warriors, and some of them do it full time. It all depends on how much they've negotiated and they've agreed that they're going to get per date. Where before you're getting X amount per week, and it might fluctuate based on how the territory is doing. Since there's no week to week, and you know there's no groups like Memphis where you would run 4 or 5 days in a row. That one show, you're hitting your nut right there, and you're getting your money, and then you're off to the next show for the next promoter. It's a different world.
Mike Johnson from PWInsider.com with Jonathan Hood for Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I was going to call you and have you on the show like 5 or 6 weeks ago, but I said, no, I'm going to wait until Mike and I and everybody else was able to see AEW for at least 10 or 11 weeks for us to get a kind of a gauge on the direction of the program. So is there a like and a dislike that you've seen so far from AEW?
I think the brand new car smell has kind of worn off a little bit, mm-hmm. but they have such a devoted audience that it's almost like they can do no wrong in the eyes of certain people. I like the product. I think the work ethic of their crew is excellent. I enjoy a lot of the promos. Sometimes I scratch my head, like, you know, as we record this, Cody Rhodes had last week issued a challenge to MJF. But MJF didn't respond on the television show. He responded on Twitter, which to a younger demographic, I get it. But if you're only watching the show on TNT, now you've missed an important piece of that puzzle. And we'll see when AEW Dynamite airs this week. I think they're in Garland, Texas, whether they follow up and they make the audience known or whether they ignore that completely and just do a different storyline step. You know, I feel like AEW Dynamite should be your destination where everything takes place. And everything important that you need to know is on that show. Sometimes the stuff's on the AEW Dark show that's on YouTube. Sometimes it's on Being the Elite, which is one of their YouTube shows. Sometimes it's on Twitter. And I feel like you should never assume everyone watching your show or everyone reading your article. This is an important lesson I learned as a writer. You should never assume that your audience knows everything you do. You have to tell them. You have to explain it to them. You have to spoon feed them. A lot of people kind of roll their eyes at WWE because the talents always have the same entrances and the same five moves and the same sort of positions when they're walking to the ring. But a lot of that is what I call Dr. Seussing it. They're basically creating a rhythm for the audience to kind of understand what's happening, who these talents are, what their stories are, and to teach the audience, all right, this is an important move. The Undertaker's hitting a tombstone. This could be the end of the match, and if someone kicks up, it's going to be a big deal. I think AEW, because they're trying to strive to be completely different, and there's such a frenetic energy to what they do inside the ring, that pattern doesn't exist. You know, if you know who the Young Bucks are forever, you know when they're going to hit their synchronized moves, and you know what their finishers are going to be. You know the Meltzer driver's coming or whatever. But if you've never seen them before, and you have to think there's people who are watching that show who never watched any of these guys in New Japan or Ring of Honor or the Independents, they probably are kind of scratching their heads going, wait, what's going on here?
Catch the rest of my conversation with Mike Johnson on PWInsider.com as we really get a chance to talk a little bit about the future for ROH, the NWA, and a lot of other things. Mike Johnson, PW Insider, is with me. Catch the rest of the conversation on Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday, the podcast.
From your hood to J-hood.
I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted, I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You're listening to my mans and them, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you are with me here on a Tuesday night. That's not what I expected. But, of course, every time I say, on a Tuesday. Of course, all the hot moms over 40 now are putting one up in the club after playing that. So we have a full show tomorrow, 7 to 10, right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Don't forget to download the podcast, wherever you download your podcast. Look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. We just heard from Mike Johnson from PW Insider. If you're a wrestling fan, check it out. Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday, wherever you download your podcast for Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. It's a separate feed from our Under the Hood podcast. So look for Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday on Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Deezer, and other places where you download your podcast, including Apple Podcasts. It's Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. Tomorrow's show, we'll be able to really dig into meat and cheese week with the Bears and the Packers. We'll get more thoughts from Matt Nagy and also try to figure out if the Bears can get this job done. I'm not going to overhype this matchup because I've seen this before, right? You believe the Bears will be able to be on par with the Packers, and then they fall short. We'll see what happens coming up on Sunday, but we'll continue to preview that game. We'll hear from Bill Michaels, our buddy from the voice of Wisconsin sports. We'll hear from him, as well as hearing from Jesse Rogers with more on the Cubs and the White Sox in what's going on with the winter meetings. I think it's very interesting because I know that he's got his ear to the ground when it comes to the Cubs and White Sox, so we'll be able to talk to him about that. As well as our usual bits, like under the, we do Tales from the Hood. We'll be able to do that as well. And a lot more tomorrow, full show 7 to 10. There's a lot of stuff that I wanted to get to tonight. We could not do that because of our abbreviated edition. That's why we have a full show on Wednesday and Thursday. We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Our thanks to you for listening. Our thanks to Jesse Rogers and Mike Johnson for being with us. Some NBA talk as well. Yeah, the Bulls are playing Atlanta, but I'm ignoring that game. We're going to talk to Andre Snellings from ESPN. We're going to talk to him about some numbers regarding the NBA and some storylines. We'll get to that tomorrow as well. Our thanks to Tyler and Sean on the other side of the glass. For the guys, I'm Jonathan Hood. Let's do this tomorrow, 7 to 10 right here on UTH.
Jonathan Hood.
I'm so hood.
On ESPN 1000.
If you build it, they will come.